Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra, when we talk about the Blue brand. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm doing alright. I'm feeling better about SmackDown again because of our lords and saviors Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
They certainly do make it a better place to be.
They are saving SmackDown Live, and I appreciate them for it.
Thank God for them, right? Like, thank God
for them.
Yeah,
seriously.
So Raw's from SmackDown is from Seattle.
You sound like Michael Cole opening the show. It's Monday. It's Tuesday night.
What am I doing here? Yeah, so we're from Seattle this week, the place that Daniel Bryan retired back in February of this year. Was it this year? It was this year. Or was it last year? No, it was last year.
Last year.
Became GM in the July. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So he comes out to open the show. Massive hometown reception. Like you said, Michael Cole's on commentary in place of Tom Phillips, who is on assignment. I don't know what he's doing, but he's on assignment.
Which I think I saw something online that it's his honeymoon or something. Like, he got married and now he's on a honeymoon, so props to him for that, I guess.
Congratulations to Tom and to his lovely wife, I would just
if
say.
If that's actually true and not just something I saw online.
And
but
if,
yeah,
and if it is, and if it is true, congratulations. And to his lovely wife, I would check the phone now and then, just saying. But, you know.
Just, you know, maybe they have an arrangement, you never know.
Maybe they have an arrangement, in which case you don't need to check the phone. In which case, that would be a waste of your time checking the phone.
You just never know. But it was so good to see Daniel Bryan get such a good hometown reaction, right? Like, the crowd did not want to let him speak. The crowd just wanted to chant Daniel Bryan all night. I think that crowd in Seattle, if they would have been able to just chant Daniel Bryan all night, they would have been like, yep, money well spent. We got to see Daniel Bryan in person. Did you see the video on YouTube of Brie having, like, Birdie on her lap and watching his entrance and doing the yes chant? It was so cute.
That was very cute. I'm not a baby person, but that was very cute. Yeah, and I've got to say, the crowd tonight, big props to the Seattle crowd. They were fantastic. Fair play.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so he talks about, you know, tonight we're going to have a 6-women tag match between Natalia, Tamina, and Lana against Naomi, Becky, and Charlotte, and they reacted far bigger to that than I did. So, fair play.
I reacted with a, are you fucking serious?
I wish someone could count up for us, because I just don't have the patience to go through it all, but I wish someone could count up in the last, like, 6 months how many multi-women tag team matches there have been from women on SmackDown. Seems like a lot. I would say there's at least 10.
There have to be. Like, if we're discounting tag matches especially, like the 6-women tags like this, there might not be quite as many, but there are still quite a few. And then, you know, the random tag matches besides, it seems like it's almost every week. So that's kind of frustrating.
It seems like a lot. He then also says there's going to be an announcement from Jinder Mahal about Survivor Series, and there's also going to be a rematch from Hell in a Cell between Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode. So, you know, he props up what's going to happen, but he wants to talk to Sami Zayn. Sami comes out to his music and does very smug dancing, which I appreciate a lot because I think Sami Zayn's smug dancing is fantastic. So.
His smug dancing is amazing. Like, what a prick. He's such a prick now, Kenny, and he's so good at it. And why does he have to be so good at it? Because it makes me think, yes, this was a good idea, even though my heart is still broken.
My favorite bit was when he started using the steps as, like, a bass for his music.
Yes.
Fantastic. So he comes in and he, you know, Brian's asking why he did what he did. You know, is this the same Sami Zayn he's known for 13 years? And, Sami says, well, he's still the same Sami. He's a great guy. He told Daniel Bryan he took control of his career that took 15 years to build. And then, you know, Bryan tries to reason with him, saying, you know, I've been in your shoes. And Sami cuts him off and says, look, we're both skilled performers, or at least I still am. Which is
delightful, wasn't it? Oh, what a burn. Like, you know, like, you and I, we're not the same. You know, I mean, we're both very, you know, well-liked or, you know, skilled in-ring performers or whatever. Oh, well, I mean, I still am. Oh, you're such a dick.
And then he goes on to talk about, you know, how management never believed in either of them, but the difference is Daniel Bryan had the crowd, you know, and had the fans. They never held their end of the bargain up for him, never got behind him the way they did for Bryan. And he told...
I did.
Sondra, the sole person in the back going, I liked you.
I did. I'm like, but I always believed in you, Sammy. Why? Why have you done this?
But then he goes on to talk about, you know, he feels amazing now, and if he had, you know, if maybe Daniel Bryan had worked smarter instead of harder and dropped his martyr complex, then he wouldn't have been forced to retire. My God, such good lines here.
I mean, and he's talking about this in the building where Daniel Bryan retired. You know, he's like, you wouldn't have had to retire in front of these people. And Seattle's just like, oh, boo, Sami Zayn. Boo. I mean, what a perfect way to make sure that Sami Zayn gets booed, right? Like having him go after Daniel Bryan in Seattle. It's perfect.
It was lovely. And then he talks about, you know, Bryan was the performer of their generation. He was always two steps ahead. Nobody could ever catch up to him. But now, you know, Bryan's the last person Sami would want to be. He would never break his body or waste his talent for the adulation of the crowd. That brings down Kevin Owens. He calls Bryan a hypocrite. You know, said that he spent his entire career fighting for the underdog and now he's on the other side. Daniel Bryan tries to kind of get involved, saying, you know, that he was, you know, he's just trying to do his best for the fans. But Owens turns it on him and says, no, you're trying to do what's best for business. You know, you're the authority now.
Oh, seriously, bringing out that line was so good. Like, so fucking good.
So Kevin Owens turning it all on Daniel Bryan, because obviously Daniel Bryan used to face the authority and they used to always say best for business at him. Kevin Owens said it was all that Bryan could do these days, and he and then Bryan left and said he was going to go back and find a couple of guys to punch them in the face. My favourite sort of tweet about this whole thing was from Bryan Alvarez, who was live in attendance at SmackDown, who said that WWE are doing the best job at hyping up Daniel Bryan's in-ring return that's not going to happen in WWE. Because that's what this was. It was like, they're reminding you how great he was, and they are putting over the heels, and Daniel Bryan can't do anything about it. So it was a weird, like, it felt like in some ways they were like having a few kind of digs at him, but like he's never going to be able to do anything about it, but you know he wants to do something about it, so it's a bit strange. Like, it's not like a retired guy who is just happy to have people go over on him. This is a guy who wants to get back in the ring and wrestle, so...
There was one point where he cocked his fist. He was just like, oh, like, you can tell he is so ready. Like, he so wants to wrestle and he so wants to get into this fight. And, you know, a lot of the digs that they're taking at him, that has to sting. Like, I mean, obviously he knows what they're going to say, but it still has to sting, right? Like them telling him, you know, oh yeah, well, at least I'm still an in-ring performer, or talking about how he had to retire when he didn't want to retire. So it's, yeah, like you can just see it in his face that when he was walking off stage and he looks back and he's like, I'm going to find two guys to punch you in the face. You can tell he was like, but I would love to punch you in the face myself, you motherfuckers, because you are the worst people.
And he, yeah, so, I mean, but the segment was really effective in getting Sami and Kevin Owens, over his heels together, and they were great, and Bryan was great at sort of selling how raging he was about it all. So it was a really hot opening segment, I thought.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it, for sure.
Then we go to one of the stalest divisions in the history of wrestling, which is the SmackDown Women's Division, to have Carmella on commentary. She has James Ellsworth with her. She's missed Money in the Bank. She's scouting the competition. Blah, 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 blah.
The story has not progressed in months.
Nope. We have Natalia, who is kind of over as a heel. We have Tamina, who is terrible. We have Lana, who's even worse. We have Becky, Naomi, and Charlotte, who are all over as baby faces. And we have a generic six women tag. Because now obviously I'm just bored with the women's division, I'm just trying to find stuff to enjoy. So I enjoy watching Lana wrestle closely because she can't do it very well. So I enjoy like when she tries to take a move and you can see how much effort it's taking for her to make it not look like she's thinking about every part of it.
Right.
So like at the end, there's a bit where Charlotte's about to submit her with a figure eight, and like when Lana's getting it put in, like she's just like, it's like she's in an improv class. And it's like, I want you to feel pain, Lana. Show me pain.
That's exactly what she's like.
And then she's like, she's not doing anything wrong. She's just not been doing it long enough to be convincing at it. That's the problem. So she, you know, she's grabbing her leg and she's lost, and you know, nobody buys it. But yeah, so it was just a very generic match.
I mean, I thought the match was fun, like more fun than some of the generic tags that we've seen, and we've seen so many of them. This one, it worked a little bit better for me, even when Lana was in there. Like, she's not great, but when she was in there across from Charlotte or Becky or whoever, like, it worked in the sense of, you know, they were doing fun stuff around her, so that was good time. But I wouldn't be able to tell you many spots in the match. I wouldn't be able to tell you if there was like a really great story to the match and why I wanted the babyfaces to triumph over the heels, who I guess are dastardly, but I'm not super sure. It's just another, you know, throw all of the women into the same segment, into the same match. And yeah, they're going to do well. Even with, you know, Lana and Tamina in there, I thought the match was good, but it was a match and it was just kind of there. And why can't we use matches like this to start something, to start a feud, to start more stories? Why can't we have some sort of progression with Carmella? I mean, being Miss Money in the Bank is great, and that's a great character aspect for her, because she likes to say that, you know, she could cash in at any time. But does anyone really, like, buy that she's going to cash in at any time? And does anyone really have investment in seeing Carmella versus Natalia? Because the story was there for Carmella versus Natalia to have some really cool tension, but they haven't done anything with it. It's so flat and ice cold. And it's a big bummer because it's inexcusable when you have talent like Charlotte, like Becky Lynch, like, I mean, even Naomi has come into her own. And, you know, I mean, Natalia is, she's good. She's fine. She's never going to be the most exciting performer ever, but there's a lot of talent in that division, and it's sort of inexcusable that they're just doing nothing in terms of advancing a story or creating intrigue of any kind.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's not really working that much anymore. I think it's because Tamina and Lana are not interesting as characters or wrestlers. So, like, if they're interesting as characters, then that's one thing, but I'm not interested. You know, it's like Alexa Bliss kind of won me over at the start, not really because of her wrestling, but because of her character. And that's kind of still where she is for me, but, like, she's improving. But, like, Tamina is just, oh, God. Like, Tamina is like if you want to eat cheese and you get handed, like, stringy cheese. And you go, this isn't cheese. And then Lana's like vegan cheese, you know? So it's just
How does that even work?
There's
I'm
just no enjoyment.
By the idea.
Well, apparently with vegan cheese as well. You remember this? Like, apparently, like when it's like melting it is a fucking task, and then when you do it, just smells like feet. So I don't really know why people eat it, but anyway, I just wouldn't eat cheese if I was vegan. But anyway, I don't know why I've gotten cheese, just because I like cheese. But this six women tag didn't really work for me. Obviously, you can tell by the Natalia and Charlotte thing that we're still kind of aiming towards that kind of. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's going to be the. I think this the last pay per view for SmackDown of this year is Clash of Champions in December.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess that's going to be kind of, you know, brimming until then. But
because we're probably not getting that match at Survivor Series, right?
Yeah, we're going to get we're going to get a 5-on-5 Raw versus SmackDown Women's match.
Okay.
I would
have
imagine.
They announced that, or is that because that's what I would assume is going to happen? But I wasn't sure.
Because Michael Cole did say later on that you know, Survivor Series is the one time of the year where Raw and SmackDown can face off against each other in matches, and that's
well,
the
yeah,
reason
but
why...
I think they were referencing Jinder versus Brock for that. But I assume some Survivor Series too.
I think that they were using that as kind of like, well, that's why Jinder can challenge Brock, because this is the one show that you... So, I mean, I assume we're going to have those matches. They were fun last year.
I liked them. I think the Raw versus SmackDown team matches are fun.
Nia Jax, get back, please. Get back now. As soon as you can. Do not go away. I need you.
Where is she?
She's got a personal leave of absence.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't seen that.
She wasn't at Raw this week, and we don't know how long she's out. We don't know why she's out.
Hmm.
So, yeah, we shall see. Hopefully she's there, though, because she is one of my faves on Raw. We see Brian walk up to Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens backstage, you know, and they're like, oh, you can't find anyone to challenge us? And he's like, no, everybody wants to challenge you.
So I love how he goes, not one person. Literally every single person.
Yeah, and then he
wants
says
to challenge you guys.
And he says you're going to face 13-time world champion Randy Orton, and they're like, okay. And then well, who's his partner? And they're like, oh, I forgot, Shinsuke Nakamura. And then Brian does an adorable attempt at Nakamura's little entrancey thing with his hands. It was
so cute. It was so Dad Daniel Bryan.
I'm just trying to enjoy Dad Daniel Bryan before he goes. So.
Oh, absolutely. I love Dad Daniel Bryan. He's adorable.
Up next we have Pulp Fashion, so, you know, watch out for the cease and desist from Universal Pictures. We have Fandango playing the John Travolta role, Tyler Breeze playing Uma Thurman, The Ascension playing The Ascension,
They're so good in this. They're so good in this. I love the Ascension now.
They do a bit where Tyler Breeze asks the Ascension what they're eating. They've got a cheeseburger. He goes to eat a bit, and then he like passes out. And then they have to try and revive him. And they revive him, and it turns out he was eating a gluten-free bun, and he finds it disgusting because he doesn't like healthy alternatives.
And the Ascension like, it's gluten-free. And they're like, we love gluten. We love gluten. You know, Breeze and Fandango, which is funny because they've referenced gluten before. And I don't know. There are just so many little through jokes that they're still playing into Pulp Fashion. when they opened it, and what was it? Fandango was like, you know, be cool, like Fonzie cool. And Ascension are like, you mean like jumping the shark? Ha 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 ha. Too late. And it's like, they're even calling themselves out for maybe we've been doing this for, you know, for fucking ever, but I'm not complaining. Like, I really enjoyed Pulp Fashion, and I'm still enjoying the Fashion Files as much as I ever did.
When
like, it's not
start?
Gotten old. That started, I want to say it was just before Backlash, because they had the match with the Usos at Backlash where they were in drag, and that was a takeoff of Fashion Files. So it started, I want to say, a few weeks before that, so May or April?
It's good. The Ascension said, you know, it's ridiculous you haven't solved the case of 2B being the Bludgeon Brothers. And then at the end, the briefcase has been taken, so the Ascension want to do a Fashion 4 assemble and put like, the hands in, like the Fantastic Four, and Breeze and
because
Fandango just walk out.
Fandango agreed that they should be friends, right? Because they said, you know, we can revive Breezy, but, you know, you have to agree to be our friends. And Fandango was like, fine, we'll be your friends. So they give him the cult gun to, like, try and stab into Tyler Breeze's chest, which doesn't end up happening because, you know, they're not going to stab a cult gun into Tyler Breeze's chest, and also because he wasn't allergic to pickles after all. It was just the gluten-free bun that set him to the floor.
Sometimes I find it weird what we talk about in this podcast. I'd rather talk about that than apparently Baron Corbin faces off against Sin Cara, who it goes like a minute and a half, and then
can we talk about the 2B thing? Like, do you think it's actually the Bludgeon Brothers?
I don't know. I don't really know if we're ever going to find out who it is.
Because I'm really intrigued if it's actually going to be the Bludgeon Brothers, or if them just calling it out at the beginning of Pulp Fashion was like, oh, ha ha ha, like, of course this is the obvious thing, but there's going to be another twist.
But would the Bludgeon Brothers work with the Fashion Files gimmick? Because it seems like the Bludgeon Brothers are trying to be dark, and the Fashion Police are really funny.
I don't know. I think that there's a way that it could work, absolutely, but I don't know if they would do it right. But then again, they've been so on point with the Fashion Files that maybe.
It feels like with
but
fashion,
it almost seems like they're coming for something bigger.
It feels like with the Fashion Files, it's the one thing that they just kind of let those guys do themselves with maybe like one writer, and they just kind of get to go off and do it.
Which is why it's consistently good.
So, Sin Cara has a match with Baron Corbin. It goes about a minute and a half, and then basically they're both on the outside, and Sin Cara runs back in the ring, and Baron Corbin's counted out in a minute and a half, and I don't really know what the point of it was.
I have no idea. So when I was watching this, I put on Twitter, I was like, I always forget that Sin Cara is on SmackDown, because I just, I don't think about Sin Cara all that often, right? Like, it just never occurs to me that, oh, right, he is part of the SmackDown roster. And as soon as I was done tweeting that, he had just beaten the United States champion by countout. So he has a victory over the United States champion. And is this how you felt about Aiden English and Sami Zayn?
Yes.
Huh.
This is how I felt. Welcome to my world.
Because I wasn't like mad.
Well, because this guy
baffled.
Didn't actually beat him. This guy just won by count out. At least there's an out. But then also, you know,
what is the point of it? Like, because Baron Corbin, how did they count him out or something? Like, he got slammed into the stairs or the announce table or something, and they were just on the outside. Like, I'm baffled. I'm baffled if they're going to, like, bring Sin Cara back and have Sin Cara versus Baron Corbin in a program. Like, is there anyone in the world that wants to see that happen? It's very disconcerting to me that Sin Cara's eyes are cut out now of his mask.
It is strange. I mean, the thing is, the SmackDown brand is so broken in so many ways, because you've got Aiden English can beat Sami Zayn, then Sami Zayn can beat Orton, and then Sin Cara can beat Baron Corbin, and then Jinder can beat Nakamura.
I mean, it just, this seems like one of those matches where they're like, anything can happen in the World Wrestling Federation, and not in a good way. It's just kind of like, all right, so anything can happen. But at least, like, at least with Aiden English and Sami Zayn, at least Aiden English is a fun character, and I adore him.
At least he's doing something.
And he's doing something, right? Because now he's with Rusev, and that's fantastic. But with Sin Cara, it's just kind of like, you brought him back for a nothing match, and then had him beat the United States champion. Like, they're gonna use this to give Sin Cara a United States title shot. Like, that's where this has to go, right?
I mean, the thing is, like, I don't even have a problem with it if it's a few months down the line, but literally last week he beat AJ Styles to win, yes, win the US title. Or not to, yeah, to, no, he won it at the pay-per-view, and then he beat AJ clean.
Yeah.
Which just seems like a really weird way to do things. And I'm not saying you can't build people and stuff, but like, Sin Cara has literally not been on television. Like
at all.
I don't understand why guys need to just be immediately given big wins over people. Even if it's a count-out one, it's just like, who cares about Sin Cara? The most interesting thing he's done is get chucked off a bus.
It's true. It's true. And so, I mean, the whole thing is just, it didn't make me angry. It's not like I'm like, oh, this is an affront to Baron Corbin. Because, I mean, I'm not the biggest Baron Corbin fan. I don't really care, like, all that much. But I just don't get it. It seems like just a thing that happened and is baffling.
I mean, I think that's accurate. That is exactly what it was. It was a thing that happened.
You should never watch wrestling and go, oh, that was a thing that happened, I suppose. Like, you should be invested, right? You should want Sin Cara to beat Baron Corbin because you should care about the babyface getting a really cool win or something, but I just don't.
Then we have the Usos backstage talking to Renee Young. They're talking about how good they felt and how they had the tag division locked down. They're kind of doing a wrap, and in comes Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin. I think Sandra and I are going to feel very different about what took place here, but we'll see. So Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin rhyme back to them about some stuff, and then they go to offer a handshake to the Usos, and as the Usos go to do it, Benjamin and Gable pull their hands away and walk off. What did you think of this segment?
I'd sort of forgotten that this segment happened until you started talking about it. I like Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable against the Usos as a concept. I don't know why they're being the dickheads who pull their hand away. But it didn't really leave that much of an impression on me, which is sad in a way because I'm the biggest Chad Gable fan there is. But I guess I'm just looking forward to the match. I don't really know what Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable's deal is yet, other than we are partners and we are the number one contenders. And I hope that we get more character from them and more progression of this than just like, oh, I don't want to shake your hand. I don't know. It was fine.
Oh, well, we do feel the same way about it then. Yeah. I like when I was watching it, I was just, again, like when Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin are trying to do the rap thing back, it's clearly not their thing and the verbiage is pretty bad. It was just kind of like,
I mean,
oh.
I like dorky Chad Gable trying to, you know, be dorky Chad Gable. I enjoy that.
I don't know, it didn't click for me, for whatever reason. Maybe it's because what you were saying, that we don't really know anything about Gable and, Gable and Benjamin yet, apart from that they are American Alpha 2.0. There's literally no character development past that, or past that Daniel Bryan was like, here, have a new partner.
Right.
That's it.
So, I mean, I would like for them to use this feud to build more character and to show more personality in exactly the way they never did with American Alpha, because I think SmackDown really dropped the ball. Like, American Alpha was one of those acts that I think SmackDown failed the most in terms of someone who, you know, like they were a hot prospect coming in, getting drafted from NXT and coming to SmackDown. That was a big deal because American Alpha were super, super over, as well they should have been because they're fucking great. And then they get to SmackDown and they, you know, like they debuted and had some fine matches, but never really did all that much. And then they won the tag team titles, but then, you know, well, I mean, they got injured right before they were even able to challenge for the tag team titles. So then by the time they finally won the tag team titles, it was just kind of like, oh, okay, well, these guys are now the champions. And then they were barely on TV and then they lost the titles and then they were just nothing. So it's just one of those situations where they were kind of like run into the ground by the booking of them. And that's what I don't want to I don't want that to be repeated with Gable and Benjamin. I want them to actually have some sort of organic rise or like do good matches and have the crowd get behind them and show some personality and actually have a story without just starting and stopping constantly. So I don't know. I worry because I don't want history to repeat itself with, you know, version 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the thing to bring up. You know, maybe in the sort of character development, they bring up that, you know, Chad Gable was part of a failed tag team and Shelton Benjamin's not had glory in years, and kind of like break them down so they can kind of like prove them wrong, something like that. But they need to do something, because otherwise, like, I don't know. It's just not really clicking for me yet. But that takes us into a vignette for the Bludgeon Brothers. They are in the woods somewhere where they talk about darkness and light, and they start smashing hammers off against the ground, but the camera is the ground. It was quite cool. And
I love it 100%. They are spooky and in a forest, and they have big hammers, and it's Luke Harper and Eric Rowan on TV, and I love it a lot.
Yeah, it's fun. I think they're going to be a good addition to the tag team scene, especially, you know, they'll have good matches with the Usos and the New Day eventually. Those will be some good stuff there. Then we have the Singh brothers bringing out Jinder Mahal, and I rarely say something nice about Jinder, but I thought he had a better promo here than usual.
Which for me is big praise.
He talked about the stuff when he went to India, and you know, they showed clips of it, and he was going to be the first Indian champion. He received a royal welcome, and then a young boy came up to him and said, "What's next?" Because he doesn't get the same respect in the US that he does in India, which kind of ties into what some people really think about him. So I thought that was interesting. He says he's beaten every opponent on SmackDown, but he now must lay out a challenge to the Beast Brock Lesnar. And prove that he's the greatest WWE champion of all time. So he's challenged Brock for Survivor Series. Talk to me, Sandra.
Well, one of the parts I actually liked about Jinder's promo here is that the crowd was chanting at him, "You can't wrestle," right? And instead of it throwing Jinder off, instead of him just stopping and looking like a deer in the headlights, he just sort of stopped, looked around, raised his belt up, and was like, "You want to say I can't wrestle? I'm the champion. Like, I'm the WWE champion and have been for a long time." I liked that fire from Jinder Mahal. I liked him proving and saying, like, all right, I mean, you can say I can't wrestle. You can say I can't do anything, but I'm the fucking champion, so I guess I can. I guess I'm doing okay. I mean, it still feels like a badly scripted show where I don't really believe that he would be the champion, but he felt more like a champion in that moment than he really has at all. So I like that, and I think he's actually able to play off the crowd pretty well. Jinder versus Brock Lesnar, I mean, I'd heard rumors that this was going to happen, and it seems like it's a thing that's happening, and that's kind of how I feel about it. Again, it's like, okay, well, this will definitely be a match that happens. I don't know how they're going to play it out. Like, are they going to have a proper finish to the match? Is it... The way this should go is Brock Lesnar just, you know, murdering Jinder Mahal, right? If we're looking at Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar as just a thing, but Jinder has this weird, like, it's almost like they've given him, and I don't play video games, so, like, my video game references are, like, Super Mario Brothers, but it's almost like they've given Jinder Mahal, like, that magic star where you can just run into the bad guys and they die, even though they're bigger than you and normally could eat your face or whatever. So it feels like Jinder Mahal just has this force field around him that lets him win matches and lets him be champion and lets him beat everyone for some reason, even though it doesn't seem believable. So Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar is actually kind of an intriguing match, but not from the sense of it's going to be such a good wrestling match that I want to see who wins. It's going to be like, oh, this is a very interesting social experiment. I wonder how backstage booking will handle this. And that's my least favorite way of watching wrestling, is thinking, you know, what decisions are the backstage people going to make, and how's that going to go in? And that's the whole problem with the Jinder Mahal title reign to me, is that I'm watching it in terms of what the backstage people are doing and, like, what does creative want to do and, like, all of these, you know, corporate decisions about wanting to reach out to new markets. I don't want to watch wrestling like that. I want to watch wrestling because I want the good guys to win and the bad guys to lose, and I want to see people beat each other up. I don't know how they're going to handle it. I mean, Brock Lesnar can't, like, just lose to Jinder Mahal, right?
One would hope not. The thing is, like, so I think people expect me to go absolutely crazy about this, which, you know.
I just feel like our spirits are broken by now.
So this is going to be his biggest challenge. So he has to go into this and have at least as exciting a match as Brock Lesnar ever has. And that is a challenge, because Brock Lesnar's matches, even sometimes when they're disappointing, always have a big match feel to them. So, you know, you're hoping that the fans in Houston are going to take it seriously. The fans did react here when he challenged Brock, so are they starting to just kind of, you know, is it Stockholm Syndrome? They just love him by default now. But he's going to have to, that's going to be his biggest test to date, and that's going to be the test of whether he, if he can do the Lesnar match and he can somehow, it can be good, then maybe there's a shot for him. If he can't, then I think the experiment's kind of done. I mean, he's not lighting the world on fire in SmackDown as champion. You're right, he did reference the You Can't Wrestle chat, which was better. I think that, like, watching wrestling sometimes of like, oh, what are they going to do to for the finish can be an interesting way to watch wrestling when they do something good. But it's the idea
I think it was interesting with, like, Cena versus Roman Reigns.
Yeah,
but Brock versus Jinder seems different.
Well, because there's one finish that makes us want to tear our eyes out. That's the issue. Is like, but then it's like they're in a corner now because SmackDown is very clearly the B show. Very clearly, it's the brand with less interest. It's the brand that less people talk about. It's the brand that less people watch. So if you go into it and Jinder just gets beat and mercifully killed, it just kind of cements what people think about SmackDown. But then if Jinder beats Brock, then how do you explain that? Because then that makes Jinder look better than Braun Strowman?
Right? Oh. Like, that's what would make me angry. That's what would make me angry is not even Jinder beating Brock, but the fact that Braun Strowman lost to Brock in such unspectacular fashion. And that actually, it makes me wonder how Brock Lesnar feels about this. Like, because I know Brock doesn't really care, probably. He's probably just like, whatever, pay me lots of money and I'll show up. But Brock Lesnar historically has not wanted to put in tons and tons of effort when he's not feeling a match, right? Like, Dean Ambrose talked about that at WrestleMania. I would say this is the least exciting Brock Lesnar match since Dean Ambrose at WrestleMania. And
yes.
It's, you know, it's against the WWE champion. So there's that. But it's just one of those situations where, do you think Brock Lesnar is going to look at Jinder Mahal and be like, yeah, like, I really want to work with this guy. I really want to, you know, do great things for this guy. I'd kind of doubt it. Maybe he will. Maybe he likes Jinder for some reason. Who knows? But it doesn't seem like a match that is going to be like, oh yeah, like, this has to be really super interesting. Because if he didn't put in the effort with Braun Strowman, who is a big star and was looking great, and it had a huge fight feel going into it, I think that's why that match was so disappointing at No Mercy. Like, if he didn't put in effort in that match, you think he's going to put in tons and tons of effort against Jinder Mahal? I don't know if this is going to be good, and I don't even know if it'll be completely Jinder's fault.
I mean, the other thing is, the alternative was going to be Finn Balor and Brock Lesnar, but Bray Wyatt has murdered the Finn Balor character by dragging him into his web of shiteness. So, you know, it's not
Pumpkin Finn Balor versus Sister Abigail in a veil. Veil Abigail or whatever.
So boring. So, yeah, I don't really know. I mean, the thing that worries me is like, at first when I heard about this, you know, after going, ha 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 ha, I thought, well, it's so obvious that Brock's winning. Like, there's no way they're going to have Brock lose now because they want him to get beat by Roman later on. And then in my head, I'm going, oh, but like, I remember going into Backlash thinking there's no way they're giving him the belt. And they did. So I'm just kind of like quietly terrified.
It actually makes me laugh because a lot of the booking of Jinder Mahal isn't like, you know, that podcast that David made you do where you like booked the year of the Maharaja and you had to like come up with these ridiculous scenarios about Jinder Mahal, like beating John Cena and, you know, beating Hulk Hogan or whatever. I feel like we're not that far off from that ridiculous, ridiculous podcast that you guys had to do.
I feel your pain.
And it's kind of baffling. Like, in a way, it's like, this is a very interesting social experiment, because I think one of the things, you know, David postulated was like, well, of course Jinder Mahal is going to face Brock Lesnar, and of course he's going to, you know, beat Brock Lesnar. And now we're in a position where that could actually happen. And I don't think it will, but I also am kind of like, but it might. And as I'm talking about it, I'm like, maybe I am a little intrigued by this. Maybe I am a little intrigued by the backstage decisions. It's still not the way I like to watch wrestling, but it is fascinating just how broken the WWE title scene is on SmackDown, and just how weird SmackDown is. Like, I understand why SmackDown ratings and attendance aren't super great. Like, it just, it doesn't feel like there's all that much to cling to. Except for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
I mean, I think the problem is, like, so the idea is, it's just, they wanted to do champion versus champion for ages before Brock, before Jinder even won. And it's just kind of a match for Brock to have at Survivor Series. But I mean, this is scheduled to be the main event.
Well, I mean, it should, theoretically, if you're looking at, you know, the prestige of titles and whatnot, it has Brock Lesnar in it, and it has both world champions, whatever you want to call it, like both of the main champions. It should be the main event. It doesn't feel, it feels more main event than most Jinder Mahal matches, I guess.
There's a backwards compliment if I've ever heard one. I think that, I mean, the Universal title has had quite a hot year. You know, Kevin Owens, Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, feuds with Samoa Joe, Fatal 4-Ways at SummerSlam, all this stuff going on. The WWE title this year has went from being, you know, AJ, Cena, and Bray Wyatt to Randy Orton and Jinder. So it's kind of like taking a tank.
It's on a downward. There's a bit of a downward spiral there. Yeah.
So, you know, even though I much less so wanted Jinder to get the belt than Orton, I'm not saying Orton's reign was setting the world on fire. It was quite boring, but I think that it felt bigger when he had it compared to as it does now, which is fine for it to not feel as big for a wee while if you're building somebody. But, you know, we're about to go into November, and
it's been since May. It's been 6 months.
So, like, I mean, it's hard because Jinder does feel like a bigger name than he did before with having the belt, but at the same time, I think the belt seems a lot less prestigious than it did before. So, it's tough. I don't know how they're going to play it. Yeah, Brock versus Jinder. Who shat in my sandwich? So then AJ Styles comes out. He interrupts and says, "You know, did I hear you correctly? You said that you've beaten everyone in SmackDown. You've not beaten me." And Jinder said that, you know, in his country, they don't even think that AJ is worthy of being in the same ring as Jinder. And AJ said they aren't in his country. And you know, Jinder asks him, "Does he know who he's talking to?" Puffed at his chest. Then Styles hits some sort of strikes on him. Dispatches the Singh brothers and then hits a pelly kick onto Jinder to send him to the outside. So I guess that it seems like once we're done with Brock and Jinder, we're going into AJ and Jinder. How do you feel about that feud as the next one?
I mean, I would love if AJ Styles would take the belt from Jinder Mahal. I would like for AJ Styles to be the number one contender for the WWE Championship. That is something I would like. My immediate thought when AJ came out was, no, AJ, don't do it. It's a bad idea. It's a trap. You don't want to do this because it's not going to go well for you, right? So I don't like that they're falling back on the whole India versus USA thing again. Like, cause Jinder's promo when he challenged Brock Lesnar, I genuinely liked it. I thought it was a good promo. I don't think it was a promo that I'm going to go back and watch and go, oh my gosh, this was amazing in 20 years. But for what it needed to accomplish, I think he did well. I fear that we're just going to get more like, but India, but USA, and that's going to be the story with AJ and Jinder, which, I mean, we saw AJ and Kevin Owens not do that story very well, so AJ and Jinder, I doubt, will do that story very well, and it's just been done to death, so I'm tired of it. But AJ Styles versus the Singh brothers, I kind of really love that idea, so I don't know. Like, I like building to AJ and Jinder. I think it makes sense. Even though AJ Styles just lost the United States Championship and then lost to Baron Corbin clean. But it's fine. Like, he's AJ Styles, right? Like, I don't think that damages AJ Styles. I think that, you know, he's been set free from the United States Championship and he can move on to bigger and better things, meaning the title, not necessarily Jinder. So, I don't know. Like, I like it, but I have this overwhelming sense of dread that it will not go well for AJ.
I think the prediction I have is one that I don't think people are going to like. Jinder is going to be your champion until WrestleMania. Where he will be dethroned by John Cena. Which means that the winner of the Royal Rumble is either going to be John Cena or Roman Reigns.
Ugh.
Welcome to New Stories.
Wow. Just why? Just why?
It's so boring.
It's so boring. Like, that's the biggest problem, is that it's not exciting, like, at all. Because if Jinder versus Cena is the wrestler, is that the rumor? Is that, like...
Well, he challenged him at a press thing in India.
Oh. Well, I mean, that could change. Hopefully. It's October. We're not talking about WrestleMania.
Okay. Just when January we have to talk about this match, don't come crying to me. I told you. In October.
I know.
We have to deal with this fucking atrocity.
I don't want to deal with it right now. I'll put it off.
So, AJ is going to lose to Jinder next. In December at Clash of Champions. So he will have then beaten AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura and Randy Orton on the road to trying to get over as a world champion.
What a world. What a world. maybe he'll beat Brock Lesnar too.
Maybe he'll beat Brock Lesnar too and we can all just cry into a soup of despair.
I'm not even like, I'm just shaking my head at this point and laughing. I'm just like, all right, well, I guess this is our life and this is what's happening. At least I have Chikara and NXT.
Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler is up next. Rematch from Hell in a Cell. Bobby Roode, who I don't know why he's a babyface. Don't know why that's happening. Don't know why Dolph Ziggler has to wrestle him. Don't know why Dolph Ziggler beat him. Don't know why we have to watch this feud. No excitement from me. Do you have anything that we can cling to of hope?
No, not really. Bobby Roode's theme is still really good.
That's all your analysis that you have?
That's pretty much my analysis, honestly. Like, they come out to have this match, and it's a match, and it's, you know, whatever. It's Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler. It wasn't that exciting the first time. It wasn't that exciting when I saw them in a triple threat with Jinder in a dark match last week. It wasn't that exciting this week on SmackDown. Ziggler's still doing his non-entrance. And of course they would have Ziggler win so that they can do this match again, even though I don't care. I just don't care. And it sucks because I like Bobby Roode. I think he has, you know, amazing charisma. I think he's good. I think when he came up, like, it felt like a really big deal when he showed up on SmackDown. And he does not feel like a big deal right now. He just feels like he's stuck in that mire of Dolph Ziggler repetition. Because Dolph Ziggler always has this thing where whoever he fights on repeat forever for, like, months. And I do not want this on repeat forever for, like, months. I want this not again, but I mean, we're going to get another match, I'm sure, because they each have a win. So, of course, we need to have a blow-off match probably at, I don't know. I hope it's just on TV and we can get it done with and send Ziggler to the sun and have Bobby Roode do something more interesting.
I feel like if, like, on SmackDown specifically, there's all these feuds where I go, why can't they just end?
Yeah, and I feel like we've been saying that for months about feuds that have ended and then didn't go anywhere more interesting. Because it seems like it's what we say about SmackDown. All the puzzle pieces are just in the wrong place. They have the talent. They have so much talent on that show. And it seems inexcusable, again, that they have talents like Bobby Roode, like Shinsuke Nakamura, like AJ Styles. I mean, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are lighting the world on fire right now. They are excellent. They are the best part of the show, hands down. They're saving SmackDown Live. But you have all of these other guys and girls who are there and who are so incredibly talented, and they're just in these nothing feuds and nothing matches and nothing feels big, and it just seems so pointless. Like, finally, Luke Harper is back on TV, so I'm happy about that, but... Like, I really want him and Eric Rowan to start having matches in the tag division stat, because at least, you know, at least maybe then SmackDown can be the tag team show for a while. If the women's division, it sucks, and then the main event scene sucks, then, you know, if Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and the Bludgeon Brothers can come in and reignite the tag team division, because then you have, you know, SmackDown's tag team division has all of a sudden gotten, like, pretty good. If Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are in it, if we have the Bludgeon Brothers, the New Day, the Usos, the Ascension as, like, a fun jobber team, Breezango delighting the world with their smiles. The tag division's actually pretty good on SmackDown all of a sudden, so I love that, but there's just I don't know. It just seems like most of the puzzle pieces are just all wrong for SmackDown. It needs to be just like knocked over and then rebuilt. But not with a superstar shakeup, because that never goes well.
Well, I don't know. Can we send Jinder to NXT?
No!
Then you find a new co-host for that, I can tell you that right now. Anyway, Brock Lesnar's going to be live on Raw to respond to Jinder's challenge. Maybe Paul Heyman's going to do something to make it good. Maybe.
Maybe. That'd be nice.
We have Aiden English back.
I just got this image of Brock Lesnar going, "I accept the challenge," like Marlena style. I don't know why that popped into my head. But.
Oh, Marlena. Brock Lesnar's going to be live to respond on Monday, so there's that. Aiden English is backstage singing. There's a couple of production guys kind of like on their phones doing stuff, and they're not stopping for him while he sings
to acknowledge
him. No,
because they are
him.
Clearly terrible people. Like, he walks past a lady as he's singing, and she looks like she's just fawning all over him, like, "Oh, yes, I got to be in the presence of Aiden English singing." She had the correct response. These men on their phones, what are they doing? I mean, he makes a good point.
I feel like this is the best analogy of how we talk about how Sondra likes Aiden English. Sondra is the woman, the rest of the world are the two men. That is pretty much how it goes. But to be fair,
I am not the only one that loves Aiden English.
So he is doing a performance to these guys, and then all of a sudden, the nudie interrupt him, and tell him he looks like the Gershwin of Grumpy. They toss cereal everywhere. The two production guys, when the nudie come in, are just like, you know, fawning over the nudie. Rusev walks up and says there'll be no more nudie because it's Rusev Day, and nudie are like, again? And then the New Day then play Rusev's theme on the trombone, and all the production guys dance as they pour cereal over the production guys, and they go away, and then Rusev says Rusev Day isn't a joke. Aiden English starts trying to sing about Rusev Day, and Rusev's like, not the time. And this was a great segment, and I'm glad that we're getting New Day versus Rusev in English, because at least that'll be fun and won't crush my soul.
It's so much fun. See, and I forgot to mention Rusev in English when I was talking about how the tag division is so much fun now, right? Because that's another tag team that's sort of come out of nowhere, but I really, really like it. It works for me. Obviously, it does, because they're two of my favorites. But this is just going to be so much fun. Having Aiden English sing and then having Xavier Woods play the trombone, I want them to have a musical contest, because Aiden English being in singing contests is always a great idea. So having Aiden English like sing and Xavier have to play the trombone and having them have some sort of like musical duel in the middle of the ring, that's my dream for this feud.
I mean, you might get it. You never know. So yeah, that happens. So it seems we're getting that.
Well, and I love Stern Rusev too, just being like, not the time.
He had great comedy timing. Like, great comedy timing.
Oh, he's so good.
Main event time, it's Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens against Nakamura and Randy Orton. Big reactions for Nakamura and Orton, big heel heat for Sami and Kev. It was a fun match, goes about 16 minutes. There's lots of good wrestling in it. Nakamura's, you know, fighting out of headlocks from Kevin Owens, but Owens is grounding him. Nakamura fires back up, gets the hot tag into Orton. Orton's kind of exploding on the heels. But in the end, Sondra, Sami Zayn hit a low blow and a haluva kick and covered Randy Orton to
and
win this match.
And pinned him in the middle of the ring, and my heart sang. Like, ah, this was the best. This was the best. Like, even though I'm angry at Sami Zayn for being an evil, evil dickhead and for breaking my heart, you know what? I love this, because Randy Orton got to lose to one of my very favorite wrestlers who's doing incredible work right now. This was such a happy day.
Sami and Kevin are victorious. They're very happy. They go backstage. They're gloating to Daniel Bryan. And they said, you know what? You know, we beat your two top guys on SmackDown. What's next? And he was like, it's not up to me. You know, but they were like, what's next? What you got next week for us? And they were like, that's not going to be up to me. That's going to be up to Shane McMahon. And Zayn and Owens are like in disgust. Just like, oh my God, what are we going to do? But Kevin Owens said, you know, they are SmackDown Live, there was nothing that anybody could do about it, and that Sami Zayn is his best friend. So a good hook for next week to say that Shane McMahon's going to be back, and I guess looking for revenge against Sami and Kevin Owens.
I'm going to be very intrigued to see the interaction between Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Shane McMahon again with the Hell in a Cell fallout, because Shane's been off TV, so we haven't gotten to see him confront them. And I'm definitely looking forward to it. I love just how overly celebratory Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are too. Like, they have a reason to celebrate the victory because it was big, but Sami Zayn just looked like he'd, I don't know, like won the lottery or something. He was like, look at the thing that I did. Look at the thing that I did. And it's justifying all of his decisions, right? Like, it's justifying that he has to become a bad person now because it's paying dividends. And that's kind of, you know, that's an interesting story. It's an interesting way to go. But Kevin not like hugging Sammy and going, hug me, hold me tight, and just, you know, being overly dramatic. And it gave me flashbacks though, because Kevin Owens is like, Sami Zayn is my best friend. And I'm like, this is so just exactly like what you did with Chris Jericho. Like, exactly what you did with Chris Jericho. And I'm sure what you've done with Sami Zayn in the past, like, but this is so Christian, like, history is just going to repeat itself, right? Like, we know the way this story goes. We know that eventually Kevin's going to turn on Sammy, and the redemption of Sami Zayn's going to be this beautiful story. Someone did pause it on Twitter. Like, what if it's Sammy that turns on Kevin? Like, that would be interesting and kind of an odd story wrinkle, but there's so much that they can do with this. And these two are just so good together. They're just incredible. And they're saving SmackDown, because the rest of SmackDown was just, like, it was there. But Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are so good. I want to watch them every week. They're making me want to tune into SmackDown more than I have in a while.
Where would your thumb be for this episode?
Thumbs... See, and going out on such a great segment and having, you know, Rusev in Aiden English and Pulp Fashion, like, I think it's a thumbs middling to up, because there was just also so much dross to it, right? Like, Sin Cara, Baron Corbin, Dolph Ziggler, Bobby Roode again, the women's division, just, I liked the match, but it's just kind of there. But at least I still liked the women's match, so I guess, like, a hesitant thumbs up, but, I don't know.
Thumbs up. My, like, gut would be thumbs down because of how I feel about SmackDown right now, but I'm not going to give it a thumbs down because I think that's too reactionary. I'm going to do a thumbs in the middle. The Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens thing is really good, but, like, there's just so much broken stuff on SmackDown. Like, what's not, like, Nakamura's doing nothing. Randy Orton's doing nothing.
Match did make Randy Orton and Nakamura just look like two guys.
Yeah.
Didn't it?
Yeah. And that's not the way they should be. Like, we've seen it in the past. You can do interesting stuff with Randy Orton. You can do interesting stuff with Nakamura. There's nothing happening with Bobby Roode. He should be a heel. He's not a babyface. Dolph Ziggler,
Is
Dolph Ziggler. The women's division is not very exciting. Baron Corbin should not be losing to Sin Cara. Jinder Mahal and AJ Styles, it dreads me for what we're going to see. So, there's just not a lot to look forward to apart from Sammy and Kevin, so...
I think we did forget to mention that next week AJ Styles is going to face
Sunil
Singh, right? And I'm looking forward to that match. Like, it's going to be the murder of Sunil Singh, but it's going to be really good.
It'll be fun, but I'm just not very excited about SmackDown right now.
Excited about it than I have been, but it's still, there's just still so much that doesn't make a lot of sense, unfortunately.
But they've got one more pay-per-view.
I'm excited for AJ versus the Singh brothers, though, so there's that to look forward to.
I mean, you know that's not what the feud is, but I know I appreciate that you're trying to find your favorite bit of what's going to happen. That's pretty much SmackDown. That is our show for this week. We'll be back next week to talk about Shane McMahon's return with what he's going to do with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. It'll be interesting with Survivor Series coming up. Does he reluctantly have to put them on Team Survivor Series for SmackDown? Or Team SmackDown for Survivor Series? We'll see what happens. And I'm sure by next week we'll know that Brock Lesnar accepts the challenge.
He'll accept the challenge.
So, later on this weekend, Sondra and I will be back with Retro Raw. We'll also be back with a new episode of Yellow Ropes Forever over on Patreon. Stuff coming up, and tomorrow the Power Slam podcast will be on Patreon 24 hours before everyone else, where Finn Martin and I will delve into talking about Brock and Jinder, the Shield's full return in gear, the departure of Neville, the potential departure of Nia Jax, the Impact Pizza, and much, much more. Exciting times ahead. So yeah, Sondra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the_ropes.
Also head over to the website insidetheropes.co.uk for your tickets for Shawn Michaels in London, Manchester, Dublin or Belfast, Kevin Nash in London, or Scott Hall in Glasgow. You can get your tickets all there. And go and sign up to Patreon. patreon.com/insidetheropes for tons of bonus content to support your favourite independent wrestling podcast, or if we're not, just insert which number of that we are and then do it.
We still appreciate you. Even if we're not your favourite, but you still want to support us, we still appreciate that.
We do. What song would you like us to play out this week, Sandra?
I mean, we just played Sami Zayn's theme, didn't we? I feel like we should... Oh, I was going to go with Sami Zayn's theme, but... Kevin Owens' theme, because he's the other one in this equation.
Here is the theme tune of Kevin Owens. Let's not take him for granted. He is one of the saviors of this show. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.